Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I am Steve, and he is...
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Yeah, we'll take that one.
That's
a solid A. That's a solid A. Not the A-plus yet, but dang it, that's a solid A.
I should have went for the A-plus introduction because it's going to be a B-plus presentation.
Well, on that...
B-plus is me being generous, of course. Yeah.
That confident note. Here we go. So glad you joined us, folks, on yet another journey. Here we are. I think we're episode 10 of season 2. Look at it that way. And I'm not sure if this title will stick, but all I wrote was, it's heavy stuff. So I think Larry's going to challenge us a little more, push us a little harder, stretch our boundaries. You can stop me anytime. I'm just going to keep going.
I'm actually not going to challenge you at all.
Shoot. Okay. Never mind.
And then I skipped a vision in Daniel 10.
Oh.
But what I said to you earlier, Steve, is I said, this is going to be more difficult for people to follow.
Most of it, so. Well, that'll challenge them. That'll push them.
It could.
Yeah.
Now, we skipped Daniel 10 this time because we did Daniel 10 earlier. Which was his man of his vision of a man and this angel that comes to talk to Daniel about the future,
right?
And so if you go back to one of that earlier one, you can pick that up. Mm-hmm. And now in chapter 11, he actually talks about Persia and Greece again. But he does it in super great detail. And do you remember when we did the three different visions?
Okay.
Remember the statue. And then later he had the vision, of the goat and the ram and the other vision. Well, this time he just starts talking about what happens with Persia and with Greece.
Okay.
And this chapter, more than any of the others, may be the reason that some people won't take Daniel as far as Rome, and they'll stop at Alexander's, four generals.
Okay.
And that's what he talks about. And he's not going to talk about all four in this chapter. He's going to talk about two of the generals specifically. So he'll talk a little bit about Persia, and then he spends a long time talking about the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. The Ptolemies are going to be the kingdom of the south. The Seleucids will be the kingdom of the north. And this is also where people really get the idea that Daniel could not have prophesied this hundreds of years before. They say it is so detailed and so clear that he had to be there for it.
Right.
And this is the part that comes up with the abomination of desolation standing where it does not belong. That's in this chapter.
Oh.
Yeah.
And let the reader understand, right?
That's from Revelation. Let the reader understand.
Yep.
But if you come back to Daniel, the abomination of desolation, everybody knew. That they were talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, who was the Seleucid ruler. Okay. Yeah. So let's do this one more time.
Okay.
So he's going to talk about three Persian kings.
Okay.
You know, we three kings, the Orient are. these are not them.
And does Orient mean direction? No, never mind.
it better now, because otherwise it's terminology.
Sorry.
So we'll have the three Persian kings, and then there's going to be a fourth king, right, that he'll talk about.
Right.
And the fourth king is going to be Xerxes, and it'll be his attack upon Greece, right? And then there will be the mighty one come from Greece, and that'll be Alexander the Great. And then he'll break it, and then Alexander dies in 323, right, in Afghanistan, we said, possibly. Mm-hmm. And he divided his kingdom, and we said this so many times already, amongst his four generals. Lysimachus, if I say that right, is one of them. Cassander,
okay,
is North Africa. And then the two that are going to apply, again, are Ptolemy over Egypt and Seleucus over the Damascus area.
Okay.
And he's going to spend the whole time talking really about, in this chapter, about those two.
Okay.
and them fighting back and forth. And this, again, is all going to happen, and it's the beginning of the Maccabean period with a guy named Judas Maccabeus, who they called the Hammer, who delivered Israel from the reign of the Seleucids around 168, 167, and around that area. And he delivers them, and they run off into the hills, and they hide in the hills. And they actually have a period of freedom after these two guys fight against each other for a great, these two empires, the Seleucids and the Ptolemies, fight against each other. The Maccabees get this period of freedom and a little bit of Jewish rule for a little while.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And the Maccabean period is where the Jewish people get Hanukkah from.
Oh, okay. Because oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. The temple is, well, I learned that on, some cartoon about the kids in underwear. I can't remember what that's about.
Captain Underpants?
No, not Captain Underpants. What are they called? Rugrats.
Oh, okay, Rugrats.
I think it's Rugrats does it, yeah. Oh,
okay.
And it might have been on Simpsons as well that they do a thing on Maccabees. Okay. But anyway, but they talk about the eight crazy nights. Well, because in the temple, the oil ran out, but the candle kept burning for 8 days.
Mm.
And the candle didn't go out, and that was considered a miraculous event. And that wraps around Hanukkah. There's more to it than that, but the lighting, the continuous lighting or burning of the candle is really, really important. So now in chapter 11, it's a hideously long chapter. And Lynn and I were reading it last night, and it's really complex, right? The way he does this. But Lynn was actually reading, I was listening. I'm way too lazy to actually read it myself. So he starts off in, let's start off in verse 1. He just says, this happened during the time of Darius the Mede. And then he says, now, I tell you the truth, three more kings will appear in Persia. And actually, if you're doing this, if you decide to read this for yourself, get a commentary and read it. Or what I'm going to do today is I'm just going to use the notes from the NIV Study Bible.
Okay.
And the NIV Study Bible will tell you who these guys are, because you won't remember them otherwise. So the three kings are Cambyses from 530 to 522,
okay, right,
BC. Pseudo-Smerdis, he was in 522. And then Darius the First was 522 to 486, right? Okay. Then the fourth king, now, those are the three, and I'm just going to turn the page. And a fourth king will be far richer than the others and gain power. He will stir up everyone against Greece. And a mighty king will appear and will rule with great power and do as he pleases. Okay, so the fourth king is Xerxes. And Xerxes is the guy that we talked about a little bit before that attacked Greece. He took the Persian army and he went through. He was a conqueror, mm-hmm. and he was going to conquer the world. And that's the one I said you'll read about. Herodotus, the first of the Greek historians. Thucydides was a proper historian. Herodotus was a historian, storyteller, and he talks about these armies, and he describes them in great detail. You know, the guys that use lassos, mm-hmm. they would lasso the guy. The guys that would use nets, they would throw a net over a guy and then pull him in and stab him with a short spear or knife. Mm. And all of these different, the guys that use the wooden swords.
Okay.
And then, of course, you have the hoplites, which are the cream of the crop for soldiers. And he talked about all of these guys, but it was Xerxes that attacked and tried to push his way through Greece, and Greece destroyed him, right? Okay. And the rising of the king after that, and we did this last week with the other vision.
Yep, yep.
This is just a thorough explanation of that, and we did this, and the guy who comes after then, of course, is Alexander the Great. And after he appeared, his empire will be broken up and parceled out to the four winds.
Yep.
It will not go to his descendants, nor will it have the power he exercised, because his empire will be uprooted and given to others. So that's the dividing of Alexander's empire. So look at how clear this stuff is, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if a historian could take this and apply it anywhere, but it really does fit here. Now, the king of the south will become strong, but one of his commanders will be even stronger than he, And if you read down in the notes, it'll say the king of the south was Ptolemy, or Ptolemy, if the P is silent. Mm-hmm. Of Egypt, and one of his commanders was Seleucus the First. Now the Seleucids were in the north, but he had a commander named Seleucus as well.
Okay.
Right? And then his daughter, he has his daughter marry the Seleucid king, and his daughter's name was Bernice, which is weird, right?
Yeah, kind of old school.
Because Bernice, yeah, well, Bernice also was the name of the one that married one of the Herods, that when they're talking to Paul.
Right.
But I am assuming that this is a different one because
sure they lived a long.
It was about 130 years before. Yeah. And then the king of the earth of the north, which was Antiochus the second Theos of Syria, and they had an alliance, and they did this marriage, but the marriage would not last. And he says this, he said, after some years, they will become allies, and the daughter of the king of the south will go to the king of the north and make an alliance, but she will not retain her power, and he and his power will not last. In those days, she will be handed over together with the royal escort and her father and the one who supported her, and one from the family will arise and take her place and attack the forces of the north. So then the one that arises, of course, it says here, is the king of the north, Seleucus the second, of Syria in the fortress, and either Seleuca, which is a port in Antioch, or Antioch itself. And the gods are talking about now are the Syrian gods. Now I'll read down a little bit more. One from her family line will arise and will attack the north. Verse number 8. And he will seize their gods and their metal images and their valuable articles and carry them to Egypt. And for some years, he will leave the king of the north alone. Okay, so now the Seleucids are being left alone to do what they want, right? And his sons will prepare for war, a great war, and will sweep like an irresistible flood. Now this is, I wonder if I'm going to read too much here if I keep doing this. Okay, but then there's a slaughter of many. Okay, so when the army is carried off, the king of the south will be filled with pride and will slaughter many thousands, and yet he will not remain triumphant. Now, the slaughter of thousands, the historian Polybius records that Antiochus lost nearly 10,000 men at the Battle of Raphia. So they think that Daniel is talking about that particular battle. Yeah. So this is getting tough, isn't it? Am I doing okay, or should we just, keep? I don't want to fight through this for our listening audience here.
But a good point is.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say. I mean, the good point is that Daniel is actually pinpointing this exact point of history with pretty great detail.
Yeah, which is why some people don't think Daniel was written so long ago, because the detail is so clear, right? And then he talks about. Again, the invader will do it. Verse 16. I'll jump around just a little bit. The invader will do as he pleases. No one will be able to stand. And he will establish himself in the beautiful land and have power to destroy it. Now, the beautiful land, of course, is...
I'm going to guess Israel.
Yeah, of course. The beautiful land is Israel. Because we're not thinking that he's talking about where he lives. He will determine to come with the might of his entire kingdom and make an alliance with the king of the south, and will give a daughter to marriage in order to overthrow the kingdom. But his plans will not succeed. That doesn't say the daughter here. His daughter was Cleopatra the First.
A lovely tie-in.
In marriage with Ptolemy. Now, this is 190. We're still 194 BC.
Right.
Right? Now, Cleopatra, the later Cleopatra, is getting closer to Jesus' time.
Right.
So this is very an earlier version. So remember, I had said that the Cleopatra that married Antony in the play Julius Caesar was actually a true story, or based on a true story.
Based on a true story.
And Cleopatra was a Ptolemy. And I just read something on her recently saying, you know, they sometimes say that like she was kind of foolish and stuff, but it appears when you follow the history of her, she was actually quite an astute politician.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of neat too. Then he will turn his attention to the coastlands. So after that, he won't succeed. So then he goes to the coastlands and he's insolent and all of those things happen. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the fall, and Antiochus dies in 187. So these are Antiochus's, but these are not the Epiphany. Epiphany's a little bit later on, right? Antiochus Epiphany the IV is in the late 160 or early 160s. So then verse 20, his successor will send out a tax collector to maintain the royal splendor. In a few years, however, he will be destroyed, yet not in anger or battle. And his successor was Seleucus the IV Philippator from 187 to 175. And the tax collector was his finance minister. And Heliodorus, he will be destroyed. Seleucus was the victim of a conspiracy engineered by Heliodorus. The contemptible person, now we got to get to the contemptible guy in verse 21. He will be succeeded, because this guy's important now. Okay. He'll be succeeded by a contemptible person. Also makes you think that Daniel lived at that time, for even using those kind of terms, right? Who has not been given the honor of royalty. He will invade the kingdom, will seize the people when they feel secure, and he will seize it through intrigue. Then with an overwhelming army will be swept away. Then an overwhelming army will be swept away before him. Both it and the prince and the covenant will be destroyed. After coming to an agreement with him, he will act deceitfully, and only a few people will rise to power. When the richest of the provinces feel secure, he will invade them and will achieve that what neither his fathers nor their fathers could. He'll distribute the plunder and the loot and the wealth among his followers, and he will plot to overthrow fortresses for a time. With a large army, he'll stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south, and the king of the south will wage war with a large army and a very powerful will be able to stand because of the plots devised against him, not be able to stand. And those who eat from the king's provision will try to destroy him. Now, I'm going to go down a little bit because this is really dragging.
Man, it sounds like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
it's not far off, right?
The only thing you don't have is there's dragons in that, right?
Yeah,
there's probably dragons here. We'll throw them in. Okay, this guy, this contemptible guy, that Daniel is talking about here is Antiochus Epiphany the IV, right?
Right.
And he's 175 to 164. At the appointed time, he'll evade the south. Verse 31, his armies, his forces will rise up and desecrate the temple and abolish the daily sacrifice, and they will cause the abomination. They will set up the abomination that causes desolation. And this abomination that causes desolation, everybody agrees, is pretty much everybody agrees, is when he does an improper sacrifice in the temple, right? And he actually asks the Jewish people to do this improper sacrifice in the temple. And they usually say he has them sacrifice a pig. Now, whether it's actually that or not, I'm not sure. But it is. It's an unholy sacrifice. It's an abomination, right?
Okay.
And some say Antiochus himself is the abomination of desolate that causes desolation. Mm. But it's his sacrifice that does it. And when he does this sacrifice, they ask Judas Maccabeus's grandfather, I think.
Okay.
They ask him to do it. He says no, and one of the other guys is going to do it, and he kills that guy. Sorry for the dings are my computer for emails.
I can't hear him.
Oh, okay. So he kills that guy, and then they run away, and Judas runs away, and that starts the Maccabean revolt.
Okay.
So if you read in the intertestamental literature, in the Deuterocanonicals or the Apocrypha, oh, I didn't say intertestamental. No, I shouldn't say that. In the Deuterocanonicals or the Apocrypha, it's intertestamental. It's the book called Maccabees. There's First Maccabees,
mm-hmm.
and Maccabees is all about this period of time, right? And remember the whole thing with the candle and all that.
Right.
You can read that in Maccabees, but it's not in our Bible. It's in the Catholic Bible,
right?
And the Dutch Reform, it's not part of their Bible, but they put it in the middle for historical value.
Oh, okay. Give it context.
Evangelicals leave it out because they don't want it to be considered inspired.
Okay.
But Maccabees is a great book and well worth reading. And it talks about all about this period of time from the Jewish perspective. Now, what Daniel is talking about is what's happening from the king of the south and the king of the north, for the Ptolemies and the Seleucids. Mm-hmm. So that's what Antiochus does. And then he says, with flattery, he corrupts the people. So what Antiochus, he was a very strong Greek guy, right? He was big into Greek culture, pushing Greek culture, right? Remember I said last time they had ideas that some of the Jewish people would undo their circumcisions so that they could be involved in the Greek games and things like that. Well, that's all to do with this guy, Antiochus. Okay, verse 36, the king, this Epiphanes, will do as he pleases. He'll magnify himself above every god and say unheard of things against the God of gods. And he'll be successful for a time. And he'll show no regard for the gods of his fathers. Or for the one desired by women, nor will he regard any god, but will exalt himself. So this is the stuff that Antiochus does, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I go down just a little bit, maybe I'll keep going. He will honor a god of fortresses, a god unknown to his fathers. He will honor god of gold and silver and precious stones and costly gifts. Very much like Revelation, right?
Yeah.
And he'll attack the mighty fortresses and help a foreign god. He will greatly honor those who acknowledge him, and he will make them rulers over many people and distribute the land at a price. At the time of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle. And the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and great fleets of ships. And he will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. He'll invade the beautiful land and many countries will fall. But Edom and Moab and the leaders of Ammon, remember Edom and Moab?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the sons of Lot.
Yep.
Right? And he will extend his power over many countries. Egypt will not escape, and he'll gain their treasures of gold and silver in Egypt with the Libyans and the Nubians in submission. But reports from the east and north will alarm him, and he will set out in a great rage and destroy and annihilate many. He will pitch his royal tents between the seas in the beautiful, and he will come to his end, and no one will help him. So that's the end of Antiochus, and it's the time of the Maccabean period. And some people actually think in the book of Hebrews in chapter 11, in the faith chapter,
mm-hmm.
when they talk about those who walked amongst in the caves and amongst the mountains, you know, in sheepskins, and they died for their faith, those of whom the world was not worthy, they think that they're pointing at the Maccabean guys as well, when they were up hiding in the caves.
And they were
being killed by these guys.
No, I mean, this is a long shot. I'm just asking this dumb question. But is that also where we find, does that eventually morph into the Essenes too? Are they the ones that kind of, hey, they're off in the hills anyway, or?
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think that could be the Essenes. I don't know where the Essenes start.
Asking a dumb question.
No, they're down around the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And, but I'm not sure of the beginnings of the Essenes.
Okay.
Yeah. Now I have to go look that up. So that next time.
Another time.
Yeah, don't tell Craig Evans that I said I'm not sure where they came from.
I didn't hear what he said there. So now, what's up with John? Then John turns around and uses this exact same imagery in Revelation.
Yeah, he talks also about the abomination of desolation, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yep. Right. Because he says, you know, and let the reader understand.
So
is he drawing on this imagery because he wants them to understand it from Daniel's point of view, or is he trying to change the imagery into something else?
I think he's using the same imagery, and we all believe that his audience knew what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're not 100% sure what he's talking about. The prophecy guys, or not the prophecy guys, but a lot of the fundamentalists that see Revelations as seven actual years, right?
Right.
The futurists, they'll look at this and think that this points to the Antichrist now.
Hmm.
Right? Now, and Janel, actually, in the next chapter, he starts talking way into the future.
Okay.
And a lot of the guys that I read, they think that Daniel all of a sudden jumps from this period of time to a far future time in chapter 12.
Ooh.
Yeah. And we'll maybe spend a little time next week and talk about that if we can. That'll be our close for Christmas.
Our Christmas close, the end times.
Yeah.
as we approach the beginning, let's talk about the end.
Yeah. As people often do.
Yes, true that. Deal. True that, my friend. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, but Daniel was very clear that this was Antiochus, you know, and the sacrifice and standing where, being where he shouldn't be. But Antiochus would have been a very important figure, and the horror of what he was trying to do would definitely affect the first century Christians as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then is it Antiochus and like the first go around and the second go around of Antiochus? Is that how we got, you know, the cities of Capernaum and that kind of that Hellenistic Greek area that, you know, Greeks kind of push in? He pushes Greek culture. Is that where that started?
Well, Alexander himself was super big on Greek culture.
Right.
And so he would have been pushing Greek culture wherever he went. But yes, it would be Antiochus that would be pushing Greek culture in the area around Israel.
Okay.
During his entire period. As far as we know, like, I don't know exactly how clear this is, but it seems like the Ptolemies, when they were in charge of Israel, because Israel was a main trade route, right? So
right.
everybody wanted to be a part of the King's Highway and have that trade route. So, but they think that the Ptolemies kind of left the Jewish people sort of alone, you know, to do their thing. But the Seleucids from the north, they didn't. They forced them into Greek culture. Okay. And yeah, that would have pushed Greek culture on them. And plus Greek culture was kind of cool. I mean, people just wanted to do it.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like, you know, hey, I listened to Drake and Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Or American culture today, right? Like, people aspire to emulate American culture.
Yeah. Like the one comedian, he said he was in somewhere in Iran. The guy was down talking America. Oh, I hate America. Let's go to Starbucks. Death to American.
Yeah. McDonald's. Yeah. Yeah. Bring me my coffee from America.
So Greece would have had that kind of power. And then later on, Rome would. Right.
Right.
But they always figured that Rome was kind of a, like they grabbed a lot of Greek culture.
Mm-hmm.
Their gods are Greek gods with different names, right?
Right.
And so they stole a lot. And why wouldn't you? I mean, it was really good.
And maybe to tie that back too, right? That's, again, maybe why John uses that imagery in Revelation, because if we see the last kingdom as Rome, John's saying, great, Daniel uses this as Rome. I mean the same thing here, you know, let the reader understand that we're talking about Rome.
Yeah, and remember, in Judea, or Israel, Greek was the first language.
Right.
So Latin wasn't their language. Latin would be in the western part. The eastern part of the empire, which is Israel, would have spoke Greek.
Hmm.
And a renewed Hebrew in their religious side, and it appears Aramaic as well. So they really think that these guys in the first century could very well have been trilingual.
Interesting.
Yeah, not quite the dumb putzes that.
No. We like to portray them as these brutes, but no, far more than that.
Yeah, at times, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's all I've got for today. So just to say that it's odd to me that Daniel spends so much time talking about the switch from Babylon to Persia to Greece, and maybe to Rome, or maybe that last part was just the four generals of the Greek guy. So, but it's kind of interesting the way Daniel does it, and the way Revelation would use some of that for what he was doing.
Yeah, yeah. And but there's no, like you said before, there's no reason why he could not have written that before the time of the Maccabees. There's no, absolutely no reason other than it's so darn specific.
Yeah, it's so clear that people say he must have lived during that time. Yeah. And but you know, for those of us that believe in prophecy, you know, God could have told him that at any time.
Yeah.
Because you're going to find in the next chapter, he goes, I don't even know what in the world I'm writing about.
Beats me. Says,
yeah. And God says, well, go ahead and put it down because it's for a future time.
Yeah.
And they'll understand.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be nice to know if some of the Jewish people picked up on Daniel's stuff and knew what was going on during that period of time. But we just don't know.
Yeah. 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 I guess we don't have a tell. What was it? The Talmud? I'm trying to think. What was the written? Oh, never mind. You know what I'm talking about. The rabbinical writings of that time. It would be nice if we had the rabbinical writings because they often reflected on that stuff, didn't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
No, go ahead. I interrupted you.
I was going to say goodnight, Steve.
Folks, thanks so much for joining us on this. Hey, Daniel 11. And as you can see, like Larry and I were talking about, mostly Larry was talking, I was just nodding my head. Daniel's amazingly specific, but there's a great tie-in back to what we started with in Revelation too. So, you know, again, John's drawing on that same imagery. Daniel's trying to tell us about the history, and it all kind of culminate as we get, like Larry said, as we look at Daniel 12. Daniel 12 is pretty weird stuff. So, anyway, thanks so much for joining us. Until next week, I'm Steve, he's Larry, and this was the Apocalary Podcast.